Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast, and this is another Defenders with Daryl episode. This time, we have a guest from the Avenging Hour. It is one of the two J's. It's Jason. Jason, how are you?
Hey there, Daryl. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We're recording this on a Monday, so fresh for the work week, maybe, perhaps, question mark.
Recovering, but yeah, you know.
Yeah. So I chatted with you. I mean, I know because I listen to your podcast that you love the Defenders.
Yes.
And you are one of the several voices I heard calling for a Defenders podcast. So you're partly responsible for this coverage.
I am sorry. Yeah, John and I had, when we took our break back in whenever year that was, because we've been doing this for too long for me to remember, we stopped for like a little over 2 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And part of that, we had a bit of a hiccup. We were going to start. We got tired of doing the Avengers. I mean, no offense to them, but we had been doing it solidly for years and we wanted to take a break after Under Siege because it was such a powerful storyline. Mm-hmm. And we thought, hey, this could be our chance. Let's do a Defenders podcast. So we actually had launched a podcast called Defending the Defenders. And I think we recorded the first two or three episodes and it just didn't work. The Defenders is it's a weird series, and I think it's a lot heavier at times than the Avengers, and it's a lot more involved. Like, there's can be so many words sometimes, and the explanations and all the cosmic stuff just gets a little heavy. But as a kid growing up, I love the Defenders. I love the weird characters, and I had a blast reading them.
Yeah, and that's why I'm just bringing in guests for each issue, because I think that's part of it is if I just try to record this and bring Philip along for the journey for every single issue, it would get tough.
Yeah.
And I know that you've found that with your podcast too, where sometimes the going just gets real tough.
Yeah.
When you're trying to work through a single title and go one episode to the next, and you're like, oh wow, I'm burning out.
You got to find something to change it up.
Yep. So I think this might be the magic key to the Defenders, and also starting with DeMatteis's stuff. And I think it's really dynamic, and the team is changing quite often.
I was curious. Why is this where I don't know if you've recorded other episodes of this. Like, where did you start? Just with DeMatteis?
Yes, just with DeMatteis. So, okay. We had our first episode with issue 92.
Oh, okay. So, you're going chronologically through from there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we are. So,
but you missed all the Defenders for a Day storyline. That's the best one.
Maybe we'll go back for that.
If you want to see characters, weesh.
True. But I feel this is a lot of fun, and being able to bring in different people to talk about the same characters but from different perspectives, I think, is really important too.
I think this is a good spot to start. The team is pretty solid at this point.
Yeah, like, it's well formed, but I mean, we'll see with this issue that new characters are introduced.
Sure.
So, if you're ready, we can kick it off.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So we have the title of the issue is Beware the Six-Fingered Hand. And I think we should all beware if we see a six-fingered hand, especially one with finger puppets on it. Like,
yes. It's kind of like the Master Pandemonium stuff from West Coast Avengers.
Exactly. Like, something's just not right about it. And we are opening on Montclair, New Jersey. And the three Defenders who say that they are the only ones who can take care of something. It's the Son of Satan. It's Doctor Strange and Valkyrie coming in with lots of mystical horses. Like, there's a whole stable that they have. Because Valkyrie is now on Aragorn because Black Knight is a statue currently.
Yeah, right? Probably shoved away in Strange's closet, right?
Yeah, he's in the sanctum collecting dust. So Valkyrie is the horsey girl in our lives. But the horsey boy, even more so, is Damon Hellstrom with three of them. And they basically just come right into Main Street barreling in. And people are just diving out of the way because what are you going to do when there's
honestly, it's not the craziest thing they've seen in New Jersey. So
true. We find out that they are seeking answers to what happened at Patsy Walker's house, and it's just a ruin. So one of the craziest things that they've just seen is a house explode, which maybe not that unusual for New Jersey of the early 2000s with meth labs, but back then, fairly unusual. And we see that Damon and his trident have their mystical abilities, and he's like, something's wrong. And it's because someone has set a bunch of spears into the rubble, making it unsafe for anyone to go into.
Yes, someone was hiding the fact that this house was blown up. They tried to make it pretend that it was still there.
Yes, which I don't know how you can do that. I mean, sure, it's demons, so you can. But the act of it exploding, did no one see it? No one, really?
Right.
And we hear someone moaning from the inside. It's not a ghost. It is Patsy Walker's housekeeper, Dolly Donahue. And my only question is, when are we going to get a Dolly Donahue solo series?
I'm surprised, right? Yeah. Patsy Walker, you know, had that romance series in the, what, 40s?
Yeah, the 40s and 50s. And we sort of see the background. Patsy was kidnapped by someone we'll grow familiar with, Gargoyle. So she looked out through the window, saw Patsy getting kidnapped. And through the night, Gargoyle went away and then blew up the house with his hand cannon. whatever power Gargoyle has.
Some sort of eldritch fire.
Yes. And he exploded the house and she survived. So
did you notice that from the time that they found Dolly under the house, she looks like she's about 112 years old.
Yes.
But then in flashback, which I'm assuming happened like a day ago, she looks like she's in her early 30s.
Yes.
it was a rough go under that house.
It really was. So we cut away from that scene and we go to Christiansboro, Virginia. And some weird things are happening that are alluded to, like, all right, well, one little boy is having nightmares. And in another house, an old dog is beneath the kitchen table howling at the stars. And we go to City Hall and the selfsame Gargoyle has undressed Patsy Walker and strapped her to a table and covered her with a modesty sheet from the bust down.
He's also apparently hung some nice pictures of some demons that he knows.
Yeah, he redecorated.
He's done some decorating, yeah.
and all the townspeople are wearing black hoods and praising Avarish. Blessed be his unholy name. So it looks like we're set up for a sort of sacrifice. And the Gargoyle is just really pushing his agenda. We were doing this for Avarish. Avarish, please hear us. And in the middle of this, Damon is channeling and he's like, this shit is devil inspired. Trust me.
He would know.
He would know. And he sort of turns on his Satan power because he goes between Hunk, who looks normal with just the hair swoops, and then he can flip on a dime and get pointy teeth and angry eyes and angry brows.
He's got a bit of a Peter O'Toole look to him.
He does. is he the lion in winter? Most likely. And
I do like the way they play this up throughout this run of Damon, you know, barely holding back his eviler side.
And he's like, you know what? I think this connects to a client I had because I am a demonologist in Georgetown.
at District University, whatever that is.
Yeah, someone from District University came. And in order to see this client, I decided to get shirtless and wear my cape and get out my trident. You know,
can you imagine if he just teaches class like that all the time?
I'm sure he does. And he's like, I touched this woman and I got a vision of these finger puppets and the defenders, only your faces. So somehow this is all connected. My trident. Okay, let me flip over to the scan mode. It's scanning. and I know where we need to go. Okay.
I feel like he's doing all the heavy lifting in this issue so far.
He really is. And it's interesting reviewing these issues with everyone, how De Matteis is giving a different focus and sort of like the lead power on how to solve things to different characters.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I just spoke with Demanda Martini for issue 97. And that is very heavy on Doctor Strange being the problem solver.
Yeah, I did skip ahead. I read up through issue 100 just to familiarize myself with how this ends.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess thinking about that, I mean, I'm not sure Patsy Walker plays a role in the storyline too, but
yeah, she's very much the storyline itself.
Yeah, you don't really realize it until towards the end.
Yeah. And so they fly off into the night from New Jersey, headed towards Virginia. And Dr. Strange is like, one second, I need to talk with someone else. And he's like, Clea, here I am in my astral form. I need you to do something. Go and support Kyle. Poor Nighthawk. He needs your help. And she's like, yeah, I'm making him tea right now, but sure, thanks. Glad I got babysitting duty this issue.
Why did you have to pop in just to tell her that?
Right. She's already there. So the three defenders land in Christiansboro 26 minutes later. And
you forgot to mention, though, that when Cleo went up to give Kyle Richmond the tea, he wasn't there.
He's not there. And it is nighttime. I wonder if we'll get some clues. So they got to Christiansboro, Virginia in 26 minutes from Montclair, New Jersey. We have to say Christiansboro does not exist. However, there is a Christiansburg, Virginia. And this is where I did some arithmetic.
Okay.
I got out Google Maps on my lunch break today. And I was like, okay. So from Patsy's house in Montclair, New Jersey to Christiansboro, Virginia, which has to stand in, or Christiansburg, Virginia, which is standing in for Christiansboro. It's 477 miles.
Mm.
So if they got there in 26 minutes, they're traveled at roughly 1,000 miles per hour.
All right. So
with their horses.
Well, they are, you know, mystic horses.
I mean, there is a purple and a blue one.
Yeah, so they have weird, like, devil tails, too.
Mm. So they, wherever they need to go, they can get there quickly because Doctor Strange was not lifting a fucking finger.
Right? Like, couldn't Strange have just, like, flipped a switch and something and they just ended up there?
Yep. Could have. Chose not to because he was too busy telling Clea what to do. So they're trying to get a read. They're like, you know, I think evil is nearby. They don't really need to go anywhere because the demons sort of spawn right there on the street. And this sort of vindicates Damon. And he's like, ha ha, told you. The demon hordes of Varish descend.
And there's Gargoyle right in the middle.
And this is how we don't need to really care that they're killing things because they're demons. Kill demons all day, although some of them look like they're a lot of fun. I like the one on the far left who has sort of the beak. There's a fun spider one next to the picket fence.
I like the one next to Gargoyle that just has the one eye with his tongue out.
Yes. Who has wings, but they're also claws.
Yes. So,
and a big tail, like sort of a Jabba the Hutt tail.
Yeah.
So the defenders do their defender shit. This is the battle of the issue. They are laying waste to all these nameless demons until Gargoyle starts taking the lead. And this is where Gargoyle is sort of kind of breaking through. He's trying to be a good guy. He's like, please leave for all our sakes. Like, this isn't going to be good. And
and Damon, of course, is like, you're a demon, shut up.
Yes, I know your kind.
We're the good guys, leave us alone.
Yes, someone like you in a purple harness and a jester collar cannot be good. You look like Toad.
He does look like Toad.
He has Toad's outfit. And Damon gets waxed. That's a hard onomatopoeia. It's W-A-K-K-T-Z. Waxed. And then we see the reveal of Hellcat, who made this outfit for her, because she was naked when we last saw her. It is something straight out of the Chris Claremont closet for women.
Just some random straps covering the necessary bits.
But it does sort of coordinate with her new skin tone, which is pink, and her hair, which is just straight up fire red. And she's like, I'm the new Hellcat, and watch out. So this is where the battle sort of enters boss battle territory, where now it is one of their teammates, but possessed by a Varish. And it gives an opportunity for Damon to sort of pull out more tricks from the Trident Handbook. And they attack the ground.
I don't know what that is supposed to be.
As a show of strength.
He's like, I made this circle shape. And she's like, I made this shape. They're going to zap each other on the ground. Like they're passing a basketball back and forth.
Not sure. Doctor Strange tries his best. His best is not good enough. So two of the three are on the ground. She's sort of lining them up very nicely.
She shot some black stuff out of her eyes.
Like Kirby Crackle.
Yeah.
But like crying it. And then it turns into the steady stream that blasts Doctor Strange's head in a cloud of pink smoke. And Valkyrie is like, you know, I can't fight women. And even if I could, I wouldn't fight you. And she just throws her sword down. And Hellcat goes in to choke the fuck out of her.
This is the most anticlimactic, like one of those Disney movies where they're like, come on, you can overcome the bad thing. I know you're still good on the inside, but this all takes place in like three panels.
Yeah. And then Patsy, the inner Patsy, wins out. And she's like, oh, I can't do this to my friend Val. And Avarish is cast out. And poor Patsy, maintaining her natural hair color of red. But now she's just normal in the bikini.
In the embarrassing costume.
The stringkini. So she casts Avarish out, and this is the signal to the townspeople, like, oh, it's lifted. I imagine that they took off their hoods and just piled them inside of City Hall. And they're
I'll save them for later.
Yeah. They can do something else. I mean, it's Virginia. Who knows what they're doing with hoods? Vote blue, Virginia. And they sort of all gather around the defenders, and they're like, if you want answers about demons, you need to go visit Isaac Christians, because he was talking up demons and demonology for a while now. So we know he's probably at fault.
So he was apparently the mayor, right, for a long time, until they said he got too old for the job. I'm assuming his family is the ones that named it Christiansboro, since he is Isaac Christians.
Yes. So one of the townspeople says, all the Christians have lived here since the family built this town up from nothing 150 years ago.
There it is. Yep.
So someone who's too old to be an effective leader.
And they stepped aside.
He stepped aside. Sounds familiar. And then he
picked a demon to take his place. No, that's not right.
Oh, no, that's
right. Let's stop the analogy.
Yes, we'll just stop at stepped aside. So they literally storm this man's house. Go in. Like,
they didn't even knock.
They didn't. They leave it to Doctor Strange is fucking wild. Like, the liberties that man takes, where he's like, we're going in. And they go to the study, and we sort of see the back of the chair, and Isaac is saying, go away, I want to be left alone. And Doctor Strange is like, fuck that. We're opening the curtains, and we just see a sad gargoyle who's like, Oh, I didn't want anyone to see me like this. And the town people are like, fucking gross.
He looks like a puppy that just got yelled at for peeing on the floor.
Yes. Never treat your pets the way that will make them look that Isaac Christians looks.
My favorite part about the defenders breaking into the house is that all the townspeople followed them in too. They're just like, hey, what's in here?
And they are like, wow, you're so gross right now, Isaac. Like, ew. In a few years, we would have gotten a valley girl saying, like, gag me with a spoon. And it's too unfortunate that it's only 1981 here. And then we go get into the story where he's like, yeah, I basically told Avarish, take me. And I was sort of smart enough because I'd find a way out of it. But I was like, okay, I'll be this ugly gargoyle for the rest of time. That's the trade-off.
Well, not really. It was... He was supposed to be the gargoyle and help them get Patsy Walker. And then I understood that he was going to be released from the gargoyle thing, but he, you know, betrayed them. So they're like, you know what? You're going to be the gargoyle forever. But my favorite part of the story is that he like, oh, the town's going downhill. You know what would help it? Maybe if I made a deal with a demon, that would fix the town's like, come on, man.
Why did you do this?
Why didn't you hold a fair or, you know, open a new store? Or...
Avarish treated me like garbage, said I wasn't worthy of knowing what the hand was about, that the whole world would know soon enough. So this sort of upped the stakes for the storyline, that for some reason the hand decided we need an agent here in Christiansboro, Virginia, to kidnap someone from New Jersey to then advance our own cause. Yeah. It's so interesting. And this is something I talked with Demanda about, like the locations. This story goes, like it is worldwide where they are going. It's wild.
I can only assume that demons have no sense of like direction or place. So they're just like, yeah, Earth, it's all just like right there, right?
Yeah. And issue 92, we were in Russia. We will go to Israel soon enough. It's crazy. We do get a bit of a plot movement in terms of Patsy and Damon. He did give her his cloak for modesty. And she's crying. Having a little sad girl moment, and he's like, you're all right now. You can see that's probably headed towards some romance, the way that their body language is, and the way that his abs are abbing.
They do get married at some point.
Yes, they do. And she's like, I found out while I was possessed by Avarish that my soul was promised to the six-fingered hand by my mother. It's the soap opera plot twist.
It is.
And
I can hear the dun-dun-dun.
And that's it. So, sort of swiftly moving, and we get a new location. We get a new team member in Gargoyle. He hasn't officially joined up, but he will by next issue.
This is his first official appearance.
Yeah. So you read some of the letters columns, which are not in the trade paperback that I have. You have everything in floppies.
Yes. So,
what was the reaction to this issue and a gargoyle that you saw?
You know, you would hope that it would be like, oh, that's an interesting new character. And well, I hope they do a lot with him. Isaac Christians is interesting because he's kind of like, in Avengers, we had Rage, the 14-year-old boy that turned into a superhero. And he's like the anti-Rage. He's this old guy who then gets these superpowers, but he's all sad about it because obviously he's, you know, in the same predicament as like Ben Grimm, who's always the thing. And this guy's always going to be the gargoyle. So they're usually about 3 months behind. So the first one I looked into was 97, and there was nothing there. They just did a bullpen bulletins page, no letters page. But starting with 98, there's a letter from a Tom Hunter of Newark, Ohio, who says he hopes they use Gargoyle to his greatest potential. Please don't forget he has the mind and views of an old timer. He also wants them to explain his powers, which, yes, good point. Issue 99, Steve Lowther of Cleveland, England, wants them to keep Gargoyle around because a weak, humble defender contrasts well with the others. That's actually a very good point. But I have concerns that Gargoyle, because of his timidity, is not going to show up well in this book. Because there's so many more powerful personalities.
Yeah.
There's also a letter from an Alan Tubow of Detroit, Michigan, who says Gargoyle needs, quote, a lot of work.
Oh, oof.
And then in issue number 100, a reader named Chris Green says that Gargoyle, quote, looks set to develop into an interesting character. That's about the biggest hurrah you can get for Gargoyle in the letters pages.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's sort of a falling flat as a new character.
Yeah, I don't.
Which, I mean, the way he's introduced, and it, he does mention it somewhere here in dialogue, like, I fought in both world wars.
Yeah.
He aged out of being a mayor.
Yeah, and his family is, you know, well established in this town. I think the problem is his introduction wasn't necessarily a bad guy, but I mean, who summons a demon to help their town's economic situation? Like, it like, yeah, just seems kind of dumb.
Like you said, have a fair.
Yeah,
have you thought about a Renaissance festival?
There's all kinds of music festivals you could host. I'm sure there's some land there.
Yeah. I think he's interesting because he's so old, like in terms of he brings a different perspective, like an older perspective without being a fuddy-duddy. But he is sort of a fuddy-duddy once you get further into the series.
He is.
As a gargoyle. He's basically like, well, you shouldn't do that. And they're like, fuck you, old man, we are.
There's some interesting setup here in the coming issues with him and Patsy Walker.
Mm.
Because she ends up blaming him for her housekeeper getting injured, which, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
And I know they butt heads in one or two of these issues.
And he very much, I think, I haven't read through all of De Matteis's run yet because I want to keep it somewhat fresh as I'm recording and everything too, and trying to string it out because it is so fun and so good that I don't binge everything and then move on to something else. I want to savor it. But to me, he very much seems like a creator favorite character. Like De Matteis created him. He knows how to write him. And I feel it's one of those characters that no one else will quite know how to do.
Like Steve Englehart with his mantis obsession.
Yes. And I know that further on, in like 85, De Matteis will write the Gargoyle Limited series.
Yes.
And that's about it. Like this character doesn't really stray from JM's writing, because no one else knows what to do with like a 90-year-old dude stuck in a gargoyle body, and how to freshen that up.
It's true.
Not much.
There's not really much you can do.
But I think he does fit in terms of this cast of characters, because you need it. It's always mystic. Like the defenders are mystic and timey-wimey, and he fits with that.
Oh, sure.
There's nowhere else where he could go in the Marvel Universe.
And I don't think he goes anywhere else in his time in the Marvel Universe.
No. There's no Saturday morning cartoon with Gargoyle involved.
No.
So, well, we finished up the issue.
Yeah.
But you alluded to it a little bit. What's your background with Defenders? Like, what drew you to them? What's your origin story?
I'm not sure I know. I don't know how much you know about me from listening to the podcast or how much you would retain. John does most of the talking, so I don't get to talk a lot. I grew up reading. I basically learned how to read on Dr. Seuss and Marvel Comics. So early on as a kid, my mom had read comics when she was young, so she didn't have any problem encouraging me to read them. And we would just, you know, back then you could get them anywhere.
Sure.
At like newsstands and in stores on spinner racks. And so wherever we would go, my dad worked and my mom didn't, and I would go everywhere with her, like grocery shopping and whatever else, and just pick up whatever comics were around. So I'm not sure specifically where I got into Defenders. I feel like the first issue I had was like issue 14.
Okay.
And I've gotten almost a full run. I think I'm missing like 20, 24 issues maybe. But I think I really caught on with, this is going to sound horrible, with Son of Satan. I like instantly liked the character because I thought it was like such a crazy thing to put into a comic book. I collected his whole Marvel Spotlight run and then his 8-issue series. And I think that pulled me more into learning about the Defenders because some of those characters appeared in and out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Philip loves the Son of Satan and he is on a quest to collect all of those issues right now.
Good luck to him.
Yes. We tracked down so many in the past year. He eventually created a spreadsheet for us to reference after, I forget what it was. It was one of the earlier issues where between the two of us, we picked up like 3 copies of the same one. And he was like, I think I need to start tracking all of this. And he's going to cosplay as Damon Hellstrom at some point. So it's a fun character. And you're right, it's so offbeat where you're like, how did they bring in the son of actual Satan amongst all of like the satanic panic that's going on in the 70s?
It's weird because there's a lot of the same type of characters that I just don't really like. I've never cared about Ghost Rider. I think it's probably because he's on a motorcycle and I'm like, this is dorky.
Yes. We don't need that evil Knievel motherfucker.
But Son of Satan just, and like I said, the dichotomy of him trying to fight against his natural instincts. And I've, back to the, like the Defenders, I was never a fan of the Hulk, Namor, Doctor Strange, Silver Surfer Defenders, because I thought they were way too powerful. I mean, I've never been a Hulk fan to begin with.
Yeah.
So when they got into these weird characters like Son of Satan and Nighthawk and Devil Slayer, I was like, this is such a weird collection of people. And I want to see what they're going to do. The only problem is a lot of the stuff that they fight against is, you know, there's another demon. Here's this demon. Here's this lady that looks like a demon. It just kind of gets repetitive. Yep. Whereas I miss some of the colorful costumes of like bad Spider-Man villains, you know?
Yeah. And I agree. That's sort of one of the reasons why I wanted to start here was the team composition, because like you, I'm not a big Hulk fan. And that lineup of Submariner, Hulk, Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, it almost seems too stable and safe. Like, you know that they're going to come out on top.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be a whole lot of drama. I mean, Namor is a bitch, but, and he'll say something catty, but by and large, they're not going to do anything surprising. There's not a whole lot of team drama you can weave in. And Hulk is a non-person to me. Like,
yeah. He's the best part are his insults.
Yeah.
So, Fishman and Bird Nose and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's not exciting, and that's why I wanted to start the coverage with a fun lineup and with some of those storytelling elements that you're getting more and more used to in the late 70s into the early 80s.
And where this is probably my favorite lineup of the Defenders. The only one that I would put up against it is the new Defenders that show up in 125 once they bring in, you know, half of the champions.
Yes, exactly. Where they're like, how about these X-Men?
Yeah.
Let's bring them in. They're still not doing anything.
But then even that goes off the rails with all these weird characters like Interloper and Manslaughter and Overlord. And, you know, you're just like, who are these people? Who cares anymore?
Yeah. And I think I've seen a lot of excitement for the new Defenders once we get to that space, too. That obviously I have a lot of friends who are X-Men fans.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, absolutely, we'll come and talk to Defenders. But then you could like hear their eyes light up when they're like, but new Defenders. Because then you get Beast and Iceman and Angel.
I mean, you also have to drill with Moondragon, but
yes. But there are some big Moondragon fans out there. Oof. So It's one of those teams where everyone can have a favorite somewhere between where we're covering now and where it ends up, that someone is going to have something that they connect with and really click with.
Yeah.
Which is a good facet of the team when you get the creative juices flowing and then also allow the title to change, just like Avengers, around the same time, where things are pretty fluid with the team lineup because they're like, whatever, like, if you want to write this character and they're available, go for it.
Yeah.
No one's keeping a tight leash on anyone who's not claimed. If they're not being used, like, even when it comes down to the X-Men, you basically just have to check with the editor and be like, you have any plans, Chris Claremont, slash whoever is editing him at that time, and thoughts and prayers to them for editing Claremont. you have any plans for Beast? And the answer is like, no. Great, then I can do whatever I want to.
Yeah, no, I have these other 30 characters on the team right now. I don't
really yeah. for them. Yep, exactly.
And that's always the good thing about the Defenders too, is like the Avengers, you've got all those big names and they're always doing all these big heroic things. And the Defenders is like kind of in the corner of the sandbox doing their own stuff. And it's just like whatever half broken toys are left over, like I can make something out of this. And
yeah, well, what refuse do we have from all the titles collapsing in the 70s? How about this one?
Yeah, like Devil Slayer. Come on, he's one of my favorite characters, but he's so weird.
So weird. I can't wait until we start chatting about Devil Slayer. I just recorded that this past weekend when he.
Oh yeah, that's is that 96?
It's 97.
97. Yeah, there he is.
Yep. So it. Good stuff. Good stuff in this issue and good stuff coming up. So
I don't want to give away the whole storyline for the Six-Fingered Hand, but I did do a little research and they only make the, it's not that big of a threat. In the entire life of Marvel Comics, they've made 7 appearances and 6 of them are 6 of them are this run right now. And then they're mentioned, they're shown in flashback in issue 103. And then they're just mentioned by name in a Captain Britain and M13 annual in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah. So they fall off the cliff pretty quickly. And at that point, they're known as the Five-Fingered Hand, which really doesn't seem all that threatening because it's just a regular hand.
That's a regular hand.
Yeah.
And I feel this story, it's a mechanism for J.M. DeMatteis to get his feet under him with the title.
Yeah, it turns into a little bit of a demon of the month thing for the run here at first, which is fine.
Yep.
It gets him to be able to establish his characterizations.
Yes, and figure out who he likes writing and who he doesn't.
Yeah.
And who will be taking a break. Because we do see some characters, they go away for a few issues, then they'll be back, but he rests them.
Yeah, it's again another good thing about the Defenders, and I would say we had talked about the original team and how there wasn't really any drama. Like, yeah, Submariner would say something awful to somebody and then fly away, but the only drama that came in was when Doctor Strange had to try to call them to see if they were available, and that kind of plays into later in the team where people are just coming and going, and you're just like, okay, we got to do this mission. Who's here? And
yeah,
you just like grab whoever's sitting in the living room and take off.
Yep, literally, like. All right, everyone in this room, I'm transporting you right now. Buckle up.
Yeah, let's go.
Here we go. this will be coming out at some point.
That's good.
Yeah, at some point.
Glad we recorded it.
Yes. This fall. So as you're thinking ahead a couple months, where are you headed with the Avenging Out?
Oh, you act like I'm in control of the schedule.
We have to pretend a little.
I just show up. I don't know what we're doing.
You're going to be winding up some of the stuff because I know you're covering volume 3 right now, but you're also pausing to cover some of those limited series.
Yeah, we did A-Next with the 12-issue series set in an alternate dimension, the MC2. Is that what it's called? Of course, we already finished Avengers Forever, which was another 12-issue thing with Kang and Immortus and all that. I think we're just I think we're flat into volume three for a while.
All right.
I know there's a couple other, there's a two issue mini series called Avengers 2. I think Avengers TWO. It stars Wonder Man and the Beast.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then I don't know if we're going to be covering it or just discussing it. There's a seven issue series called Avengers United They Stand that was based on the cartoon.
Oh,
so it's not really an Avengers thing. It's like, it's not a real Marvel continuity thing.
Sure.
So I don't know if we're just going to discuss that or if I'm actually going to buy those issues and we're going to read them. We haven't Ooh. Decided.
Okay.
That's yeah, about
they,
it.
They did the same thing for the X-Men animated series too.
Oh yeah.
So
is that the one that had, is that the one that had Spike in it? No, that was the X-Men. What was that one called?
I don't know. The 90s one was just straight up adapting episodes. So.
Oh, yeah. 90s X-Men. Sure.
Yeah.
That's the one that they just relaunched, right?
Yep.
With 97. X-Men 97 or whatever.
Yep. Well, everyone should check out your show's account on Instagram. It's at The Avenging Hour.
That's correct.
And that is where... John, much like I, just post shit from that week's issue or issues to try to give a flavor of what's happening on the podcast.
You gotta rile the crowds, right?
You gotta. So everyone should check that out. Maybe they will figure out who you are based on the comments.
I'm out there. It's a public account.
Everyone find Jason. It's a scavenger hunt.
See, I mean, you posted my Instagram account on your reels this morning. So
yeah, only in a story. So yeah, maybe people by the time this comes out, well, you missed that opportunity.
Oh, that's right. They're on a clock right now, huh?
Yep, they are. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this wonderful episode about Defenders 94. Come back for Defenders 95 with my next special guest. I forget who it is, so you'll be surprised too.
Hey.
Hey, bye.